It's Sunday night at Dragon Con. I need amplification. I mean a mic. I mean...
amplification.
Boy, I felt like we're back in carry.
So I think it's 10 o'clock. Are we live? Or are we giving...
Are we going live yet? We're live!
Woohoo! Yay!
This is my fourth or fifth panel. A fourth of five panels, and that's the most applause I've gotten. So.
All about marijuana. Jeez, I don't know.
Yeah, well, the applause wasn't for you. It was for the subject. Yeah. We admit. Peter, do you want to start with the introductions?
Yeah, we might as well.
Since you're the one on the right.
Hello. Welcome to medical marijuana, regular marijuana.
Changing times for medical and recreational marijuana.
He created the title.
Next year, we promise it'll say cannabis. We're sorry about that.
Right. Let's not
get the wording right.
Let's be fair. Why? I never. Anyway, welcome and thank you for coming. I've been doing this for God knows, I think like 12, 14 years.
The panel, not marijuana.
First time I got the big room. Yeah. Of course, they moved me to 10 o'clock, but you know. I can't understand it. I asked for a bar to be put in here. That was my special effect. Yeah, we're going to get the proceeds for George or Norman. Obviously, nobody listened to me. My name is Peter Freeman. I'm an accountant. I have offices in California and New York. I have a niche market. I do a lot of medical marijuana dispensaries all along the country. I've been involved in initiatives in New Hampshire, Massachusetts. I was involved in the referendum in California. Colorado didn't like me, so. But I didn't like them, so it was okay. And then, you want to introduce?
Sure. My name is Dave Moss. I am an investigative researcher at the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
It's 10 o'clock. Live with it.
Sweet. Yeah, we deal with civil liberties in digital online spaces, but I've only been at EFF for about a year and a half. Prior to that, I have covered medical marijuana's implementation in New Mexico as a journalist for the Alt Weeklies there, and also covering quite a bit in San Diego, where that is one of the hottest areas for it. A lot of controversy, a lot of raids. So covering that quite a bit as well.
Excellent. My name is Andrew Greenberg. I've been on the board of Georgia Normal for a number of years. That's the Georgia chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. We've been having some much better success of late, but point of fact, Georgia is one of the first states in the union to have had a medical marijuana law, and it is still on the books. The trouble is the state has to provide the marijuana. I'm serious. This is still live statute. But the state has to provide the marijuana and has to get it from the feds, and this hasn't happened since the 80s. So, yeah, but we've had this law since, like, I believe it was 1980. So we were actually one of the leaders in this area. So there's been some good stuff going on. The screen, is it on both sides? Yeah, to my left, shows a press release that just came out from Georgia. The green screen, yes. From the Georgia...
There's no screen over here, but I can pretend.
He's a green screen all in himself. And we actually just had our first of our hearings on medical marijuana and changing in regulations and creating sane drug policy in Georgia. And it went very, very positively. Had some very good speakers out there. And I'll talk a little bit about this. Do you want me to start off with pushing my agenda, or do you want to push your agenda first?
Fine for me.
I think you want to go macro to micro or micro to macro?
Wait a minute. Oh, macro, yeah, macro. Macro.
Go ahead. All right. Go ahead. Go play with Georgia.
All right. So anyone here ever been to a state called Georgia? Anybody? All right. One or two of you have been to a state called Georgia.
Georgia on my mind. Give them a break. Come on.
All right. As I mentioned, the state.
Exactly.
The state. Sometimes it feels that way. As I mentioned before.
Rowdy crowd.
Georgia Normal and Peachtree Normal have been very active in the state for a while on creating a sane drug policy and especially focused on cannabis. Can someone move a mouse for me? The press release I was about to read is a good start. Oh, it's right there, that computer. It's a good start in the right direction. And one of the amazing things about the efforts on reforming drug policy in Georgia is we are getting good traction from both the Democrats and the Republicans in the legislature. For those of you who don't know, Georgia is currently very heavily Republican state officials and Republican majority, supermajorities in the House and Senate. That's really cool. There are a number of Republicans who are now taking lead roles in getting some changes in the bills. Now, the question is, what are the final bills going to be? I just lost the press release myself. I had it pulled up here so I could read parts of it.
You could go up front. The mic's movable.
What? The mic's move? I thought they were taped down.
Yeah, I understand. No, they can move.
Are they taped down or are mobile?
You're mobile. Yeah, we're mobile.
Well, we have a mic that's mobile. Come now.
All right, so some of the main areas that were excellent. So this is actually from a state rep, not a senator. I'm sorry, but the senators are also heavily involved in this issue. This is from state rep Alan Peek, who's a Republican. He's out of Macon, of all places. And we're not talking about Athens. We're not talking about Atlanta. We're not talking about Decatur. We are talking Macon. It is imperative that we as lawmakers do everything within our means to study medical cannabis so that we can help those families who are suffering from terminal illnesses here in Georgia find a solution, one that will require... I just feel like a rock star now. One that will not require them to travel outside of our state, thus becoming medical refugees, which has been a term that's been popular of late. We have clear evidence that our legislature and Georgians desire legislation that would allow this treatment to be legal in our state, and we need to act now. Today's testimonies also supplied us with a wealth of information and research that supports the growing demand for medical cannabis in our state, as well as its effective use in other states. We have a unique opportunity to learn from the successes and failures that other states have experienced and use that information to create the best legislation that we can. Our goal is to use these meetings as a tool to learn more about medical cannabis, yada, yada. So there are some great parts of this. Yada, yada, yada. It's not in there, but he is a legislator. He won't mind me saying that. The best part of this is it supplies a wealth of information and research that supports the growing demand for medical cannabis in our state as well as effective use in other states. Now, what's actually going to happen with medical is a big question. There are attempts to do just the oil, which has limited effectiveness for medical treatment. There are a lot of the things that cannabis is used as a treatment for that the oils won't necessarily work for. But, of course, one of the most obvious groups that are affected are children with seizures and the like, and that's one thing where there's some evidence that the oil does work. So by legalizing that, they take away, and I hate to use the term, the poster children of the effort for medical. But there are a lot of other areas where we know that medical is effective without outside of the oil form. The oil form is not universally successful. But the amazing thing is that our legislators are talking about this in a very serious and very focused way. There are a number of reasons for this. One, there are the sob stories of people who do benefit and clearly benefit by the use of medical marijuana. Two is there's a huge economic impact happening around the country, and Florida's got a massive ballot initiative right now. This is kind of stymied us here in Georgia because all the money right now is going into Florida, so it's kind of hard to get any financial support in this area right now. But as soon as Florida changes, you're going to see a dramatic interest in Georgia. However, there are a number of groups that do oppose this for a variety of reasons. A lot of these reasons are economic. Some people do have a philosophical argument against marijuana, but the majority of arguments we are hearing are strictly economic. One of the major ones that we keep facing are from the municipalities who are afraid of a significant decrease in their revenues. We've seen how Ferguson gets so much of its money from drug money. There are Georgia localities, especially along I-75 and I-85, they get a lot of their money off of drug busts and are afraid of losing a source of revenue. There is opposition from police groups. There's the expected opposition from prison industrial complex. The surprising areas of concern, and these are ones
we'll do questions later.
Right, there are people allergic to the oil as well. It's not effective for everybody. Right. But one of the other oppositions that we're hearing from, and this one has surprised me, but it's one we really have to deal with, is some of the manufacturing associations in Georgia are very concerned not just about increased accidents on the job if they have to allow people who have a medical condition to use their medicine at work, but primarily about increased insurance rates. And this is one thing we've been trying to find right now is studies to show that these rates and rates of accidents or insurance rates do not go up. But it is a legitimate concern the manufacturing groups have that this will have a seriously detrimental impact on their bottom line and their competitiveness. And that is an argument that plays really well in Georgia. So, well, we need studies to show it. You need studies to show that they're not going to be running the forklift into each other. Well, they do that straight anyway, but we want to show there's no increase in forklift jousting. But anyway, there is a growing movement right now. These hearings, if you live in Georgia, follow it. PeachtreeNormal.org is the main activist group. That's where that press release was up that you can check out. Georgia legislature is an interesting animal in many ways. One of the most interesting aspects is we actually have a two-year session. So at the beginning in winter of each year, in January of each year, legislature goes into session and bills can get introduced. If a bill doesn't pass by the time the legislature ends for that year, usually in April, it can go to the next year. So 2015 is actually the start of a new legislative cycle for Georgia. That's why these hearings are so important. We have the chance to get bills introduced in 2015, and even if they don't pass in 2015, the bills stay alive to try and get them to pass in 2016. So we have a chance to see who the main opposition is, what our main chances for success are, what legislators will support us, and so forth. It used to be that we'd go to the Capitol, the Gold Dome here, and the number one thing we'd hear from legislators is, I don't hear from my constituents on this. They don't care about it. Now they're hearing about it, and we're trying to focus more of that attention via Peachtree Normal. So the first thing you can do if you want to be involved in this is go to the PeachtreeNormal.org site, sign up for the newsletter. Our next meeting is this – right, thank you, Tuesday at Manuel's Tavern. What time?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Yeah, Manuel's Tavern on North Avenue. You haven't been there, you should be there. Anyway, the last one was really cool because we had Cop Watch do all these neat demos on how to deal with police encounters. All right, so, Shelly, did I run over my 5 to 10 minutes?
Yeah, you did, but that's okay. David will shorten his speech.
We'll see. I thought I would be rather short, but maybe I won't. So I want to say first that the Electronic Frontier Foundation, this is, whether marijuana should be legal or not, it's not really within the policy decisions of the organization. That said, many of our board members are very, very active in legalization movements. John Gilmore, John Perry Barlow, both very much. And on an individual level, I think you can pretty much guess where San Franciscan EFF libertarians stand on this issue. But in my previous capacity as a journalist, I was always working for papers that were very pro-legalization. And so when we would go and cover this, we wouldn't take the position of, oh, well, let's do the balance, should they, shouldn't they, but rather the standard is, yes, it should be legalized, yes, we do have a medical marijuana system, let's make sure people are doing it responsibly. And that means not necessarily being totally positive about everybody working in this sphere, but actually holding them accountable as well. So a few years ago, one of the things I did was I teamed up with a nonprofit called the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, which is also based in San Diego, and I went from collective to collective around the city, grabbing membership forms, terms of service, privacy policies, and just the actual membership forms. If you're not familiar how California works, they kind of set it up in this not perfect system, where there's not really a whole lot of... The initiative system makes it difficult to adjust the law once it's in place, and so there's a lot of things that weren't sorted out, and a lot of it was left to the individual counties and municipalities to come up with their own policies, and a lot of them have refused to do so, leaving everything in chaos. But generally how it works is that you have a collective of people, and you can have you have a storefront dispensary that's run by a nonprofit group of people, and so I'll just sort of walk you through the general process of how this works. You show up, you fill out a form, you go see a doctor, you get your little recommendation, you take your recommendation to a dispensary, you sign up as a member, then you can go back and do it. But what we found is that through the course of this entire process, you're leaving a really, really shocking digital trail of your whereabouts. So starting with, you go to the doctor, and you go to one of these doctors who specialize in giving out medical marijuana recommendations, and the first thing they ask from you is your driver's license, and which they then scan, like literally scan into a computer. They have you fill out a form with your medical history, which they also scan into a computer. You see your doctor, they give you a recommendation, which they then type in your name and your various information about you, and give it over to some third-party database in which you know nothing about. What's that? No.
No, but they have one hell of one magnet right next to that that computer. Let me tell you that.
But there's a few different groups. But you'd have your recommendation form at the bottom. It would say like www420 evaluations or whatever it is. So when you go to the dispensary looks at your driver's license, probably also scans it in again, has you fill out more paperwork, which they also scan in or enter into their system. But then they run that number against this database to make sure your doctor was legitimate. And if you looked throughout the process, okay, so first your driver's license is being digitized and put into a computer system for this doctor. Then maybe you get out your Weed Maps app to find out where you're going. And that's collecting information on you. That's leaving a Google Maps trail of where you are. Then you go to the dispensary and you walk inside. And, oh, crap, I don't have any money. Look, there's an ATM in the lobby. And, yeah, people use the ATM in the lobby. And, oh, yeah, you're creating a digital paper trail of how much money you took out. And from that, a DEA officer could, therefore determine, generally how much pot you're purchasing. But they don't necessarily need to do that, because a lot of the regulations say that you need to keep very detailed records of how much you're purchasing, exactly what you're purchasing, which then goes into a computer. And oftentimes, what a lot of dispensaries won't tell you is that the local regulations say that the sheriff's department can walk in and access that at any time they want to. Then you've got the cameras up there. You've got your database in the system. You got your entry in the database system. So it's quite a lot of things. And then you look at the actual privacy policies, and they're just garbage. You don't know who wrote them. They weren't necessarily written by a lawyer, or at least not a very good one. They don't disclose half the things. One of them said, we are in compliance with county, we handle everything in compliance with county code. Now, if you had actually gone and read the county code, you would see these details, like the sheriff is allowed to walk in. We give copies over to the sheriff's office. They don't disclose that to the patients. They just say, well, we say that it's up to the patient to go read this obscure, county code that's buried on the county's website, which is baloney. They should be telling you straight up, this is what's going to happen to your information. Some of the more responsible ones were, up front they said, if you're a member here, you may be called to testify on our behalf. We can only protect you up to a certain point, and your responsibility as a member of this collective is to defend this collective. And if we have to call you into court so you can say, yes, I have cancer, yes, I have skin conditions, yes, I have a knee problem, yes, I have PTSD, they may do so. And that may seem like offensive to your privacy, but at least they're disclosing it to you, which is better than half the other dispensaries we looked at. So that's sort of the general thing. And as people are passing legislation, introducing legislation, this issue of, it's not just, well, can you access it? You need to keep in mind that when you're crafting this legislation, the privacy implications of it need to still be in there, because even if it's legal on the local level, it's not necessarily legal on the federal level. And so the laws that you think protect you on the state level are not necessarily going to apply when the DEA comes in with a search warrant. And these DEA agents are not putting together, when they write their affidavits for raiding a place, they're very basic. One of them I saw, largely was based off of going to weedmaps.com, looking at the user reviews, seeing that somebody had said, the pot's really great here, I got really high. And they said, okay, that is recreational drugs, that's not medical. We're going to go in like that. And people don't realize that when they go onto Weedmaps and say things like that, they could be getting people in trouble. And, you know, while I'm on the matter of responsibility and things like weed maps, a lot of these dispensaries out there who build their sites aren't building any kind of security measures into it whatsoever. Weedmaps.com actually does have what's called HTTPS. So when you log on to it, you have a secure connection. That's not necessarily going to protect you from people knowing that you visited the site, but it will protect you from knowing what pages you browsed on the site. A lot of the other sites don't have that. And that, you know, if any law enforcement agency is sitting on the wire watching the traffic, you know, because it's not hard for them to get a warrant to say, hey, we want to see who's visiting, potpotpot.com, which I hope is not a real site. I just made it up off the top of my head.
Grabbing it.
If it is, we don't want to know about it.
Right. And so, I guess the sort of take-home thing is that when you're working on this, think about privacy. But the people who are providing, marijuana to patients really, really need to be responsible about it. And if they're not being responsible, they really shouldn't be doing it. That's it.
Okay.
Making sure he gets applause this time.
No. Don't hope for him. He gets applause. For him and me, don't applaud. We'll take laughs. So, welcome back. We did this last year. Since last year, we have had 4 states pass legislation. We now have 23 states, including D.C., D.C., that has passed a legalized medical marijuana law. Colorado, obviously, and Washington have passed recreational marijuana laws. California failed in their initiative. There were a lot of reasons why they failed. One was pretty much they didn't know what they were doing. By the way, one of the best clinics, if you ever go to California and you need a recommendation, it's a chain of doctors. Well, it's a clinic chain. And the clinic is called Dr. Feelgood. I do not own any stock in that company. It's just every time I show up, I just love the name. It's Dr. Feelgood. Come in and we'll give you your recommendation for California. For people that are not in Georgia but are out of state and happen to have a legal growing institution, I'd like to remind you that the federal government has just put out a request for proposal. They would like to, they do buy, and they give a proposal out. It used to be, the last proposal, I think, was, I just want to check myself. Yes, it was last time. They went for 9.6 pounds of marijuana that they were going to use for research. Now the proposal is up to 1,400 pounds of marijuana that they would like to pay you to grow. No, can't distribute, but they want to pay you to grow, and they will distribute it for research purposes.
Someone will be paid to smoke it.
No, I know. One of the things that is not mentioned in this proposal is that over 40,000 pounds of seized marijuana by the federal government is going to be put out to various universities to do further medical research.
Can you hear that?
So there is a trend from a federal perspective to start doing research to possibly get this off of a class 1 drug and move it to a class 2 drug. Actually, you can't do it to monkeys. It's against NIH. Don't ask me why. you got to run with the government when you can. There is one thing that I would like. I got into a slight discussion at the bar. I discuss a lot of things at the bar. And I would just like the feeling from this group. One of the issues we were talking about, and a person came up and said to me, well, I used to live up north in New Hampshire. You're never going to pass legislation there. And I kind of looked at him and said, well, I'm sorry. I actually come from New Hampshire also. And we passed already our medical marijuana statutes. And he looked at me and said, well, I want you to know I know the last state that is ever going to pass anything. And he basically said, I did not know what state it would be. And he said, Texas. Texas, in his belief, is going to be the last state. And a gentleman from Texas came up, very large gentleman. They seem to grow them large there. And looked at me in a somewhat scowling look and said, he's totally right. Texas will be the last state. And even if the federal government passes, we will not pass anything. And I'd just like to know, does everybody believe that Texas is going to be the last state in this group?
I don't believe it, no.
Utah.
I don't think Utah will be the last one either.
No.
Don't count on the Bible bet. Think one of the allies we're starting to cultivate here, and I use cultivate on purpose, is ag. The agriculture lobby here is big. And this is a massive crop for the agriculture. That's why Kentucky is looking so big. So many people here would like to see commercial cannabis, commercial hemp, passed. So there is a growing group here on the business side of ag, and that is a powerful lobby in this state. So if we get them fully activated, which we're trying to, that would make a huge difference. And that's true through the South.
Okay, wait. We'll be there in a minute. Let me have some fun first. I mean, we're losing people. Let them at least go out with a laugh. You know, so let's talk about New Jersey. And as you can see, we have laughter already. New Jersey passed their legislation in 2010 to basically open up dispensaries. Their dispensaries have to be open within a medical university. Now, the medical university said, great, we're going to get all this money because we're going to be able to distribute it, and we're going to have all this great data source, you know, to basically track illnesses and all that. The federal government came in and said, we love you. You guys are great. The moment you open up a dispensary, every dollar that you get of federal funding is gone. Would you believe there's no dispensaries open yet in Jersey? And, of course, there are now multiple lawsuits in Jersey to get a dispensary open and try and change the law outside of that. Just to make David here a little bit even more worried, there is an initiative out of the state of Arizona. There are certain states that basically have a repository of everyone that has gotten a recommendation and therefore gotten a state license. California's repository, it's there, but it's really not there. Arizona is passing and pushing an initiative that everyone that gets a license from any state needs to be registered in a single depository so that any person anywhere. So in other words, if you get your recommendation in California and you fly out to, let me pick a state that actually will recognize somebody else, Arizona. Oh, shocking. So if you're in California and you have your registration and you walk into an Arizona dispensary, they theoretically will give you your prescription. Arizona wants that to be a centralized database so that Arizona can actually go in, not just go for the card, but go in and check if you are registered, if you have fulfilled all your requirements. One of the requirements in almost every state is you can only be licensed or registered in one dispensary. So what used to happen was, before it went electronic, was you would go to that dispensary, and then half a mile away there's another dispensary, and you would sign up for that one. And the reason why the dispensary owners wanted that was because they are allowed, they're given, when you sign up at a dispensary, you're giving them your legal right to grow a certain amount of plants. So when you sign that up, the dispensary now has the right to grow those plants. And that is why, I mean, it's in every state. Every state, they have these initiatives. The dispensary is saying, hi. If you buy your first quarter ounce of gold, we will give you it at only $25, whereas mostly everybody else gives it to you at $45. But you have to sign up, and you have to give up all your other dispensary rights. So that is where this is becoming a very large business, because if you keep growing it, The magic number supposedly is 1,000 plants now. If you grow under 1,000, DEA kind of will not look at you, unless you live in Humboldt. Yeah. That's in California, sorry. Because in Humboldt, they were raising money by basically the police department there, creative, was actually going around and being paid about $20, I think it was between $5 or $20 a plant, and they will certify that these plants were only going to be for medical marijuana purposes. So therefore, the DEA could not take them because it was within state statute. You gotta love creativity. Come on now. And by the way, when we talk about the Attorney General has now reiterated since my last time I was here in 2013 that the DEA is now going to basically respect the states and locals' laws as they pertain. Mm. The problem is that a lot of the states and local laws are so fuzzy that, you know, it's kind of, well, they didn't leave it, so therefore we, the DEA, are going to get into it.
Yeah, it's still a little messy, yeah. than a little messy.
The DEA basically in California said, we have certain conditions, and if you abide by these conditions, we're not going to shut you down. But if you don't abide by these conditions, we're going to close down your dispensary. And one of the people very brightly said, well, what are these conditions? And whereupon, I think a petulant 3-year-old came out of the speaker and said, we're not going to tell you. And they haven't told us. We do believe that one of the statutes that have been in their mind is, if you're 1,000 feet near a school, okay, you will be closed out. And that's what they've done. Pretty much, other than that, you know, we can talk about a lot of humor going on. There are still dispensaries being raided in California. They're still being closed down. One of the new tricks legally that you would love to know about, the kind of fun, is they now are going to the landlords of the buildings.
Mm-hmm. I covered that in San Diego, yeah.
Yeah, and they're basically sitting there saying, hi, you basically have a drug trade in the building. Get them out or you lose the building. Whereupon, what's unfortunately happened to the DEA is that some of the more healthier dispensaries are ending up buying their own building.
Right. This is also one of the reasons the legislature in Georgia, there's an issue, is that all the legislators who know what's going on have a very much a wait-and-see attitude. What are the feds going to do? Are we going to just create a whole big mess here, or is it going to work? Because there's a lot of folks who have an eye on how much money can be made here, and they don't want to be losing it. Hey, I wanted to talk about Texas really quickly.
Oh, and I have something else that I forgot to say, too.
Go for it.
Do I open up the can of worms?
Go ahead.
Nah, not me.
So earlier I had said, you know, sort of defined EFF's position about, you know, one way or another, you know, we don't take a stand. But we do have a very strong stand on the right of people to learn about marijuana, to discuss marijuana, to organize marijuana. And that is why California Normal is one of our 24 clients suing the NSA right now over illegal mass surveillance. And I can read you for just real quickly, because you read something, I'll read it as well. You know, the director of the California Normal had to write a declaration explaining why the NSA is an issue for Normal members. And he had said, California Normal and its members are highly sensitive to the fact that numerous of our members and supporters have been arrested, prosecuted, or otherwise harassed for marijuana offenses by federal law enforcement authorities, even when their activities are specifically permitted under state or local law. California Normal is further aware of press reports that the DEA has a special operations division that partners with the NSA and other federal agencies to maintain a secret massive database of telephone records to launch criminal investigations. The DEA has been reported to cover up its misuse of this secret obtained data by a tactic known as parallel construction, in which a secret investigation is launched against a subject in order to develop legal evidence for a search warrant without divulging that the secretly obtained phone records were the original source of the tip. California Normal experienced an abrupt drop in the number of hotline calls we received after the revelations of NSA's phone surveillance program in late June. Prior to them, we received an average of about 15 to 20 calls daily on our hotline. Afterwards, calls dropped to 5 to 10 per day. that's a real issue, that the NSA has a massive chilling effect on the ability to pass legislation, the ability that if you're going to call Cal Normal to find out how you can be involved, that you're going to end up on some massive DEA database, and then the DEA is going to get this data and say, like, oh, well, this data is kind of shady how we got it, so we're going to use this, and then we're going to come up with some other reason to bust you. And that's what parallel construction is.
Yeah, we've actually had that
over
issue.
To Texas.
Well, actually, I'll talk about Georgia once more. We've had that issue in Georgia with an earlier iteration of Georgia Normal, where just the existence of that Georgia Normal was a reason for the Georgia State Police to basically bust the board back in the 90s. So it's something that still continues, and the legality of it's questionable, but it certainly happens. But for Texas, because I've used this quote before because it helps when I'm dealing with Republican legislators, Rick Perry. Of course, he's leaving. He's leaving the governor, so now he can say this, but
he's been indicted.
Indicted. What I can do as the governor of the second largest state in the nation is to implement policies that start us toward a decriminalization and keep people from going to prison and destroying their lives, and that's what we've done over the last years. So he's actually come out for at least decrim. Now, of course, he's leaving as governor to go to other places, but
no comment.
There may Texas. There are certainly forces in Texas that would love to make money off of this issue.
Okay, we could have fun and tell you some really great stories, but I think what we're going to do instead is I think we're going to open up to questions, if there are questions.
Do we have a mic?
Do we have a runner?
There's mics over here.
We're not going to run. We'll ask you if you could possibly just line up and we'll do questions.
Okay, can we line up and we'll do questions?
Over here? Is the camera's over there?
Where would you like them? Obviously, line up where he has the mic. This is a logical thing for me, but I'm an accountant.
All right, so whenever I get into an argument with people about the whole gateway drug issue, obviously I haven't conducted any scientific studies on this or whatever, but my whole theory on it is if you're buying pot on the not medical scale in a state where it's legal to buy medically, you're dealing with someone who's already risking a very long jail sentence just to sell you $5 worth of pot. So it's in their best interest to push coke or meth on you to really drain your wallet for the next few years before they get busted. And that's why pot is a gateway drug. That's why you go into a liquor store, the person selling you the beer isn't trying to push meth on you because he's legally selling you the beer.
Well, 357 Magnums, man, they got all the speed pills still in.
Or pushing cigars or cigarettes on you.
Exactly, but it's not illegal to do those.
No.
And they're not already risking a lifetime in jail to sell you the beer or the cigars. For the people that are selling you the pot, they're already risking that, so why don't they just push the coke or the meth on you and drain your entire wallet? Because it's pretty much the same risk. And that's why it's a gateway drug, in my opinion. I just wanted to see what y'all's opinion on that was.
So you're saying, just to make sure I understand what you're saying, is making the point that if it is a gateway drug, and not conceding that it is or not, it's because, not because somebody smokes pot and then they're like, oh, that was great, I want to do coke, but rather that because... But because the dealer himself, because we're talking about a criminal or whatever who is selling multiple things, and they sell you the pot, and then they want to sell you something more expensive, and is that what I'm understanding? Yeah.
The dealer's interest is in making more money by getting you hooked on something harder, which actually is chemically addictive versus emotionally addictive, because they're risking the same jail sentence either way.
So yeah, I feel like Leap makes that argument,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the availability argument.
That if you legalize pot, then the people who are providing pot are not providing.
Get
all
them
those
out
other
of that
things.
System, that ecosystem
exactly,
where it exists.
Right.
Now there are no good studies on this yet. These arguments were made in Colorado. These arguments were made in Washington. We hope we'll get some numbers out of them. It's been especially made towards juveniles. The idea is right now, if a juvenile is interested in weed, which it might be the first drug that most juveniles will do, by buying that from someone, they are now in an ecosystem where other things are available. On the other hand, if that ecosystem is gone, if those people aren't supplying pot to everybody, I mean, really, you're not going to make your money off of 16-year-olds. You're looking for older folks. If those people are shut down and they're only selling crack, a teenager is less likely to go straight for crack. That's been the argument. No studies that I have seen yet on it. I'm hoping to see something out of the recreational states that will back that argument. There have been some studies, and I don't think they're really good yet, that shows it's an ecosystem, not that if you smoke pot, it's like, hey, I want crack. It's more that you are in a place where that is now available, and if you're interested, you can try it. If the availability is not there, you're obviously not going to make that leap.
Okay, I'm going.
When I was in high school, I could buy pot or Coke extremely easily, but getting beer was hard.
Well, our argument.
I respect that, but we're talking medical marijuana. I'm not going to talk about Colorado and Washington State.
Well, that's on the topic. That's part of our
problem. I understand. The issue that you have to understand is another issue that it supports the issue if it's a gateway drug is that there have been numerous doctors that have been writing marijuana recommendations. You see, they have to write recommendations. They can't give you anything else because then they would be basically selling drugs. These people have been actually brought up for charges as drug dealers, and it has been proven that they did not do even the minimum amount of what they're required under the ethics of medicine in that state. And they are basically have been arrested for as a drug pusher. And that actually supports the argument that it's a gateway drug because here you have doctors pushing the drug. Okay? And that's been...
Does it lead to OxyContin? Does it lead to OxyContin?
The issue of gateway drugs is that it's your first drug. And if basically you can get it legally... As well as, I don't smoke. I've never
social
smoked.
Interaction.
We won't discuss the other thing, but I've never smoked. Okay, but I'm just saying there's a lot of information legally of that support that can be used to support the gateway theory.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good.
So I'm from Massachusetts, and we have decriminalization, and we have. Medical marijuana as well, which is, I believe medical marijuana is actually a little relatively new.
It is.
As I don't know about any dispensaries yet. I'm wondering if you can speak to the state of it in Massachusetts, because I think you said last year that you did some work in Massachusetts as well, right? If you could speak to the state of it and where it's going and how much of a time frame we're looking at, and also... The whole privacy issue, and I'm wondering, were you implying that there is some large database that every state is going into? Are states run differently? I go get a card or whatever the heck it is up in Mass, if I go get one, I mean, am I going to be in some sort of database that I have to be concerned about it maybe relating to another database that I might be in professionally or anything like that?
Let me answer the question about the database because it's a really great answer. I have no idea. And the reason why is that there's a hole in the legislation in Massachusetts, and Massachusetts basically is saying, it's kind of like, and we'll get to that later. So they haven't gotten to it later, but they will. From a perspective, I've been in contact with a batch of people that have applied for dispensary licenses in Massachusetts. I think that you're going to probably get your first dispensaries within the year. It's a lot of people. It has become a very large political, economic ball game about who gets the first dispensaries.
I've heard that there's some sort of like minimum requirement of having like 500,000 or 2 million or something in the bank or something before you can open one.
I know somebody that blew 12 mil.
Yeah.
And basically has been rejected by Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Because somebody found an old misdemeanor of his, and under the statutory rules, you cannot have a misdemeanor. So therefore, he spent $12 million to basically get all the licenses, follow their requirements, and somebody, I wouldn't say a competitor, found this and blew him out. I would say to you that, yes, you'll have it within a year. I believe that Massachusetts will have some type of registration policy. They'll give you a card. One of the people actually suggested that it actually be put on your license. So like you're a donor, you know, eyes, whatever. I'm sorry, can't remember what. Yeah. An organ donor. Thank you. Any help, throw them a help. That basically it will also be put down that you are licensed to do this. And as you renew your license, you will have to renew the recommendation.
Speaking briefly to the database issue, this is a bill that we raised here in Georgia a couple years ago was the idea that any other state's prescription could be counted as medical for Georgia. You couldn't get the marijuana here, but if it was in your car, that prescription would basically act as your get-out-of-jail-free card. It is medicine in that case. That would how the medical marijuana would act. The main issue we ran up against was the inability to verify those prescriptions. So at that point, we could not find a database that the state could get access to.
But for everyone not in Georgia that happens to go to Oregon, that happens to have a card, and happens to have a couple of, let's see, the last guy got caught with a couple of pounds, and he was going to a concert, but it was all medical marijuana. It didn't work for him. That's all I'm going to say. Yes.
I personally have had seizures where I was having seizures almost every day, and I was usually having at least one grand mal seizure every week, and I was having panic attacks daily, and also a panic attack could lead to a seizure because the fear of a seizure could cause me to go into a panic attack. And I actually had to move to California to get oil, but now my problem is that with my job, I travel a lot. I'm with a circus, and with that, like, it's one thing if things are legal, but to travel with it is a big concern. But if I don't travel with it, then it could always come back up again, you know, especially performances, people taking pictures, you know, mm-hmm. flashing lights. So how long would it be reasonable to think that at some point, like, it will be able to be traveled with? And is there a state where you can get a prescription where you can actually travel from state to state and bring your medicine with you?
Okay, just to answer that, just have us some paper. I'm renowned for paper. Okay, the states that basically will recognize California's card, and also basically you could buy in that state. So you got Arizona, you got Maine, you got Michigan, Nevada, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. Those are the states that basically will recognize your card out of state, recognize that you have an issue, okay, and will also sell to you, okay? All the other states will not sell to you, but they will not arrest you as long as you have a valid California card.
Also, if I fly with it.
That's a myth. Okay. I knew somebody was. I love this myth. The myth was, hi, I get on the plane in California. It's legal in California. And I'm going to fly to Massachusetts. It's legal in Massachusetts. So therefore, I can put it in my pocket. I can take it through TSA. I can get on the plane. I can get off at Massachusetts. And I am totally fine. No one will bother me. No. TSA is a federal agency. Okay, so therefore, if they catch you, okay, they obey federal statute, you're basically transporting drugs.
Yeah, I thought
that
quite
I'm more comfortable with Georgia changing its laws before the federal laws change.
But by the way, there is a couple, I think 4 years ago, I predicted that we probably have a change in 10 years where the federal litigation would be passed. I think I'm now down to, I think we have 4 more years.
Really?
Before, yes, the federal statute is going to change. It will be legalization nationally.
No, it'll be removal of federal offenses. It won't be legalization.
No, that is moving it just to a class 2. I mean, I think class 1 to class 2 is a totally different issue. I think once everything gets moved to a class 2, then you're going to have a lot more states moving towards it. But I think that the federal government is actually going to come out, because what I think it is, it may be the first national sales tax attached to something will be marijuana. Boy, isn't it great to be first. You're welcome. Yes, sir.
Hello. I'm going to totally avoid any soapboxing. What does normal, that you say that they wanted reasonable laws. Please define what normal's definition of reasonable is, because I'm likely to have a very different definition.
Oh, a sane drug policy? There's a pretty clear litany of failures of the current drug policy. One, it doesn't deter. to the main harm of marijuana is being convicted for possession or sale or whatever of marijuana, not the use of marijuana itself. Three, it interferes with what is medicine. It interferes with a doctor's treatment, and it interferes with the patient's use of medicine that really helps. We've already had one person talk about that. So at this stage, the idea is to reduce the barrier to people getting the medicine, to reduce the harms that come to the point where the harms of being convicted are certainly not the biggest part of the drug, where the main harm, if you had any harms, would come from the use of drugs, not from being convicted and having your life ruined. So it varies from state to state what is considered sane policy. In Georgia, we've been working towards decriminalization, and at this stage, we've been moving towards either expanding the current medical marijuana law or to implement a new and more effective medical marijuana policy. Now, as far as recreational, for Georgia Normal, that hasn't been the main focus. The idea right now is to try and get medicine to basically reduce the greatest harm and then move forward from there. So sane drug policy, one that limits the damage that is done by the policy itself.
Does that apply to any other drugs, or is it just focused on marijuana?
National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Okay. Well, I didn't actually stood for it. And are you guys mounting any attack against the prison lobby?
So the lobby itself, it's really hard to call it a lobby. There are various groups which have a strong interest in it, and some of them are very specific lobbying groups. A lot of them cross across different lobbying entities. There's not a lobbying group. There's not a trade association for the prison industrial complex. That doesn't exist at that point. 10 minutes. The idea is to go ahead and ensure, A, that people's rights are being respected, and that, B, economic policy isn't driving our criminal policy, that we don't have laws in place just to make a jurisdiction or an individual money, that it serves a more significant social purpose.
Let's be more terse.
Perfect.
Yes, go. Speak.
Hi. Even in states like, of course, Colorado and Washington, that the drug testing still... two examples. I've been still sometimes seeing reports that that legally prescribed patients still get fired from their jobs or denied jobs. Yeah. And I've been also hearing how, of course, in tolerant states that one could grow and sell to dispensaries as long as they do not test positive for marijuana.
Okay, I can address... First of all, Washington, Colorado, the problem with Washington, Colorado is that they basically passed a recreational drug law. They did not pass a medical marijuana law, okay, though there is a part of it that is, so that employers are taking the position, insurance companies are taking the position. You're taking a drug on work. If you're near heavy construction, this is a no-no. We don't want you working. If it was a medical marijuana, there actually is statutes, federal statutes, that would actually have been able to protect you. In regards to growing for a dispensary, I know I've dealt with maybe 5-6 states. There is, yes, you have to get, a grower has to get permission or a license to grow from a dispensary, but there is no requirement that that person that grows is not himself a user. So he could have marijuana in his bloodstream.
But he better have a medical prescription.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're assuming he's obeying the law. Does that answer your question?
Kind of.
I can't help but notice somewhat of an irony in how in previous attempts to push through legislation, you know, they say, oh, think of the children, what if it gets in the hands of the children? And now all of a sudden they're finding out that this oil is helping these children with seizures, yet... In the past, you know, they've seen very obviously adults with debilitating conditions, cerebral palsy, cancer, to which obviously cannabis helps with. Do you think that they're just caving into social pressure, or do you think that they have a genuine empathy for these children?
I think it's very difficult to see a child that's ill, mm-hmm. that basically if they can be given something that can allow them to function normally. I'm sorry, I'm the guy that cries at cartoons. Okay, so I have to believe that yes, children are specific. I think also children basically being cured are actually helping the medical marijuana incentives, because it's rough for a politician. Jeez, are you friendly? He's putting up signs of how long to basically pass the initiatives.
Okay.
Yes. I also think, I mean, maybe not just children, but I also think that once you start seeing legislators their own kids seeing the benefits, I think Congressman Brian Bilbray is no longer in office, but Congressman Brian Bilbray's daughter, he'd been way against marijuana for years, but his daughter now has, you know, like what, stage 3 melanoma or something like that, and now has become a major advocate. And sure enough, where do you see his position going?
And we're sorry that he does have a child that has that.
Yeah.
No, really.
You all have mentioned both recommendations and prescriptions. What is the
script? No prescription.
No prescriptions.
No prescriptions. If you write a prescription, you're a drug dealer. You can only write recommendations as a doctor.
Yeah. I may have slipped and said
that. Okay.
I do too.
I'm really adamant about that. It has to be you get a recommendation. You do not get a prescription.
Well, does the dispensary verify that you have this recommendation?
The dispensary will verify that the doctor that gave you the recommendation is a doctor that has the ability to give a recommendation.
Usually.
And, we're going on, and it is on a script, you know, with the license and everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
David, I know you talked about, I believe it was either talked about economic motivations for police and how they'll pull over cars that are driving with the money, not the cars that are driving in with the pot. And how, with the police fighting to keep their budgets, how is that not viewed as a obvious form of corruption?
We're talking about.
Just say it is. Just say it is.
Yeah, I think he answered his own question on that one.
I mean, it's a perverse incentive. I mean, yes, we have an asset forfeiture system where people can seize your property without you being convicted of a crime, and then that money goes directly into the pockets of police departments who use it to buy themselves garbage like little things called challenge coins that they give out to people to award themselves, and they use it to buy more spy equipment, and they use it to buy themselves nice cars, and they use it to buy themselves new gyms, and they buy themselves, you know, they buy themselves trips across the country, and yeah, they are able to pay themselves overtime with it as well. Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is.
So if you like a single, yeah, it is. Okay. It is. But it's until the statutes are changed in the state.
It's legal corruption.
It's legal corruption. Go ahead.
Aren't there certain states that, of course, alcohol, of course, you have a different type of alcohol percentage, of course, have different types of regulations for THC and CBD percentages in your pot?
Yes.
Okay. What kind of federal regulation would probably be imposed upon that you could foresee in the future?
I think that what's going to happen, pretty much all states are starting to get into an aspect that the THC has to be lab tested by a certified lab. And that it will be tested and based on the THC level, that anything above that level, unless you can prove medical issues, will not be allowed.
This is the last question.
Last question. Well, we'll hang out for a couple minutes. Yeah.
We'll be here.
I had a question about a question that was earlier. The girl who asked if she could fly with or travel with her prescription?
Yes.
Is there a way that she could mail it, like not through federal mail?
Yes, okay.
I'm asking.
Okay. No, I respect what you're saying. Can you mail marijuana?
If it's two states.
Is it legal? No.
Okay.
Not mail, not UPS, that not was, FedEx.
And by the way, FedEx never had dogs that sniffed all the boxes. Okay.
Those boxes just disappeared.
Mail a pot of coffee.
Right. It was just a question.
I respect it. You're using the U.S. mail to distribute drugs.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I worked at FedEx for 16
thank
years.
You.
We had dogs every morning.
Yeah, but they weren't there marijuana.
Get the question.
Really?
Well,
yeah, question
we could have been answered by
about that. The DUIs. And stuff like that, because DWIs. Now they're talking about all DWIs, but they're sitting there talking about how they're having all these different methods that they're going to do, like mouth swabs and this, that, and the other. Now everyone knows that marijuana isn't something that just like disappears out of your system like alcohol does after a couple hours and drops down. You know,
but like, what is your opinion on the, like
the actual premise on that. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
You missed my. You missed my 10 rules of dealing with police encounters session right before this. I work with two lawyers here in Georgia who say they've never lost a DWI marijuana case where the person refused all tests, all searching. I'm sorry. When they said, I do not consent to any searches.
Well, I didn't consent to a search when I.
You got
to
say it.
No, I did. And the only thing I didn't do was roll my window. I locked my car door. I did everything else. But because I just completely spaced out and was trying to, do what the cop told me to and get out of my car immediately, because he said immediately, I got out of my car, locked my door and everything, so I stand right inside my door and unlocked it and took me to jail. I lost a job over it, everything like that. And I mean, like,
was that Georgia?
Yeah, it was.
Oh man, I should
and it's like, it's really
call me for lawyers.
I don't have a whole bunch of money to spend on a lawyer, I was going to school.
Always get even it. The lawyer, getting the lawyer is always worth it. The amount of money you will lose from being convicted so overwhelms anything you'll spend. Just economically, not just all the rest of your life being destroyed. Economically, you get the lawyer.
It's on your record. The problem is, it's on your record. I respect what you're saying. Attorneys are attorneys. Attorneys.
I'm not an attorney.
Attorneys are costly.
You get busted for weed, you get a lawyer.
Yeah.
Even if it's a gram in your pocket, you get a lawyer. In Georgia,
the wind blew, they would have lost all the evidence. Okay, it was like a flake that he got.
That
wasn't what I was really concerned about. I was just more concerned about the GWI. Like, when they sit there and now they're going to do the mouse swab and stuff like that, what logic is there behind that where it's actually going to get pushed through? How do we stop that?
In Georgia, unfortunately, we have what's called implied consent. Yeah. So if you drive in Georgia, you are giving the police, you're implying that you've given the police consent to search you for alcohol and so on. So this is one that needs to be beaten in the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's already upheld it, which is a problem. I think there's a lot of reasons why it can get overturned at this point. At this point, you really just need to get a good lawyer who handles DWI marijuana cases.
All right. My statement is that what you're discussing is a component of DWI because it's alcohol issue, it's marijuana issues, and it's something that has to be addressed from a legislative perspective. But it's not just limited to marijuana.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. And thanks, Scott Jones, for setting up another great EFF track this year at DragonCon.
All right, we're done.